Speaking of Atlanta, Willie, I do want to take this opportunity to remind our folks, if you haven't been listening to the first two parts of this podcast, this is the kind of the third segment where we're wrapping up on college football, moving into the third item on the docket, the third thing we have to cover in our 13-month absence, which is the MLB playoffs. Any final notes on college football before we really get into that, Willie?
I'll just say, what Georgia's trying to do is historic.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're going to do it personally. Like you said, you said earlier, this is the weakest team that they've had of the three potential ones. I honestly think the 2021 team was like pretty significantly better than this team. I'm not saying this team's bad, and especially not having Brock Bowers is not good, but man, that team was special. I mean, how many first round picks between those 2 years did that team have? Like
100%.
Jordan Davis, Jalen Carter, Nakobe Dean, Monty Rice, Keely Ringo. I mean, maybe not all the guys are first rounders, but it just goes on and on and on. And then that goes, and then even going further back than that, you have like the Kirby Smart's early years, like year two, when he had Nick Chubb and Sony Michel. Thoughts and prayers to my boy Nick Chubb. Speedy recovery. I had him in both my fantasy leagues this year, and that injury was that was tough. I remember watching him our freshman year at Oxy, and I was like, man, this dude's gonna win Heisman if he stays healthy. And then of course he tore his ACL. And I was like, God damn it. Anyways, okay, let's move on to baseball, because this is, I guess, our biggest point of contention between you and I. Mean, we've had differing takes before, but I think I remember texting you like, I've got some takes on this, because the playoff format, I think, has drawn a lot of scrutiny, and potentially rightly so, because of who has failed to make it out of their first round as a result of the bye. But I, right off the top, your general thoughts on the 2023 season are what?
So ignoring the, I'm sure we'll get into a good discussion about the playoff format. I just want to say that, October's crazy. It's amazing. It's amazing as a sports fan to watch the MLB playoffs and, to see a first time World Series champion. I think it was just my overwhelming big picture thoughts about the MLB season was it was just crazy, because you have a first time champion. You have all these teams like San Diego and the two New York teams, like who everyone thought was going to be great, like being bad. And it was just a tale of the unexpected for me, like, you know, records being broken the postseason, Tampa having that amazing win streak to open the season, like Baltimore not coming out of nowhere because they were pretty good last season, but like just having an unreal season. The drama in the AL West. And yeah, Ronald Acuna, setting records. So for
40-70, baby. 40-70.
I just think it was chaos, honestly. Like, that's like my number one takeaway from the season.
Yeah. My dad is one of those people who watches baseball once a year, from basically September 30th to October 30th or like November 1st, whatever's first. So he asked me about the pitch clock, and he said, I hope the pitch clock isn't really a thing in the playoffs. And I was like, no, it is a thing, and it's really, really good for the game. Mm-hmm. And I think the one thing that I will say about the pitch clock is that I love it, but there is one part of it that does rub me the wrong way, and it's a part that overwhelmingly favors pitchers. So hitting a baseball is hard enough as is, right? You're hitting a small object with a piece of wood with a very small sweet spot that's coming at you with movement at a very high velocity, with all kinds of vertical and horizontal break, and you're supposed to hit that square. You're supposed to hit it between these two lines, right? That's very hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
The pitch clock basically gives the pitcher an extra 6 seconds, an extra 7 seconds, if you will. My math is wrong. An extra 7 seconds. Because under the pitch clock, so for those who aren't as familiar, the pitch clock is, like in basketball, the shot clock. The pitcher has to start his motion to throw the ball before that timer hits zero, before that clock hits zero. Okay, so the pitcher has to be ready to go. He's got to get the ball back and be ready to go within 15 seconds. The hitter, however, has a different set of rules. The hitter is allowed one timeout, but the hitter has to be, in the language of the law, alert to the pitcher at 8 seconds. What does alert to the pitcher mean, number one? And number two, there is a difference between having 7 seconds to get ready from 15 to 8 and having the full 15 to figure out what you're going to do to that hitter. Because the hitter can only do so much to disrupt your timing if you're a pitcher. Or vice versa. The pitcher can only do so much to The pitcher can do a lot of things to disrupt your timing. Hitting is all about timing, right? And the pitcher can do so many things to disrupt your timing. He can hold, he can do this like Nestor Cortez, Johnny Cueto, like herky jerky, like motion. Or he can do what a lot of really, really savvy pitchers will do, which is just hold the ball. They'll come set and they'll just hold the ball here. They'll just hold it and hold it and hold it and hold it and hold it until like 1 second, and then they'll start to go. The hitter doesn't have that extra 7 seconds in between the 8 second mark when they're supposed to be alert to the pitcher and ready to go. Now, this wasn't supposed to be a rant on the pitch clock, but it just came to mind anyway. But that 7 seconds is huge, because if you're the pitcher and your timing gets disrupted, you only have one timeout. If the pitcher could do that as many times as he wants. So you're making hitting exponentially harder, because you're giving the hitter less time to really prepare. Now, umpires have done this thing where they kind of enforce it in the sense of like, no, we're not going to let pitchers like quick pitch, or we're going to blow something time. They're going to call time if the pitcher is like basically coming set and then starting their motion and then like stopping and then starting and then stopping. They can basically blow that dead. We've seen that happen in a couple, I think this season and last season, with Nestor Cortez specifically. But the point is, the enforcement of the pitch clock definitely needs to be adjusted. And I'm not saying that because offensive numbers are down, because offensive numbers, as we know, with the shift restrictions and bigger bases, is up. Offense was up this year. And Ronald Acuña Jr. became the first and only member of the 30-60 club, the 30-70 club, and the 40-70 club, and the 40-60 club. So the idea of baseball being boring doesn't really exist anymore. Baseball is much faster and more exciting. But it also puts the hitter at a little bit of a disadvantage, because he has seven seconds less than the pitcher. 13 seconds less with the extra, or 12 seconds less with the extra 20 seconds when runners on base. You know what I mean? So yeah. To me, this season was a great representation of something that works really well in some ways, but also honestly kind of got lucky. It kind of got lucky that offense was so good. I think if the pitch clock by itself, if there were still the shift, would have been a disaster.
And I think that's the key point right there, is the shift. I mean, how many times do you watch a game and it's like, oh, ground ball going through the hole on the left side? Oh, like
to a third baseman playing in shallow right field. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, and oh, that under the old rules, they just would have been there.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's a really interesting point. I mean, because I think that actually that's a very under-talked about point too, because I think a lot of people think that the pitch clock actually disrupts the pitcher more, because they're the ones that ultimately have to throw the pitch, and they're like, oh, they're being rushed and the pressure, you know, they don't have much time to do their signals or regroup or step off the mound or walk around. But it definitely also puts the hitter at disadvantage, because, man, you got to be so locked in that to just be there is crazy. And so, yeah, it's a really interesting point. I mean, what are your overall thoughts? So, like, overall, though, like, on the pitch clock, are you a net positive or net?
It's a net positive for me. I think the only little bit that takes away from it is as I'm saying, this implementation, this whole, like, alert to the pitcher thing at 8 seconds, that, I think, is the biggest nonsense as far as the whole pitch clock is concerned. But on the whole, I think it my fear of it speeding up the game unnecessarily is basically gone, because it's not that we're losing action, we're losing dead time, the time in between pitches.
And I think that's the key right there. I think that honestly for the viewer, you want to see action. And I also just think, to be frank, particularly during weeknights where people are working, it's like a 2.5 hour versus a 3 hour game, or a 2 hour and 45 versus 3 hour. Like, that extra half hour does make a difference.
Yeah. It's at least 20 minutes shorter. Yeah. And that's huge. Like, it gets to the point where, like, you know, the Braves game will be like, the Braves will play at 4 o'clock Pacific time and they'll be done before I have dinner. And I'm just like, what do I do now? The Braves are already done. They already played today. I'll try to watch the West Coast teams, but like blackouts and all that. So can't watch those teams on MLB.tv, which is dumb. But yeah, I think, you know, as much as I like longer baseball games, as much as I like those high scoring, intense, like really, really touchy, not touchy, really, what's the word I'm looking for? Those really like tense moments. As much as I like that, like having those really intense, like long marathon, like 4.5 hour, 5 hour games, like it's a lot, man. They play 162 of them. 2.5 hours is plenty.
I think bottom line is there's more action, and like it's just so much better for the fans. Like,
yeah.
Just it's nonstop action. It makes it really entertaining to watch.
You know? Oh yeah. It's a better experience both going to and watching. So I was lucky enough to go to the Braves series, every game of the Braves series when they were in town against the Dodgers at Dodger Stadium. And like just being at all those games, like they weren't like marathons like you would historically think two really good teams playing against each other would be. They're, you know, pretty quick games, even with as much scoring and as much traffic as there was. You know, like there's a lot of traffic on the base paths, there's constant action, there's pitchers being their best, there's hitters being their best. I mean, I saw Ronald Acuña hit the home run that gave him his 30th. That was awesome. It was a grand slam too, and that thing was a no doubter. Like it looked like a no doubter on TV, but like in person, as soon as he hit it, I was like, "That's it. That's the record." And yeah, it was awesome.
So I also one thing I want to say before I forget. Speaking of Ronald Acuña, I just want to say is like, I think that it might sound small, but in my personal opinion, one of the single best things about watching baseball is runners trying to steal a base. Like, I love watching runners try to steal a base.
Mm.
And so I love the new bases, and I love the new rules where you can only throw over a certain amount of time and like you can't hold the ball.
Yeah.
Like, because, man, that I love watching Arizona try to steal a bunch of bases. And you know, it creates one of the best things about watching baseball is it creates these like inflection points during a game where there's lots of tension. And one of my favorite things about tension is the battle between the pitcher and the runner. You know, you can clearly tell the runner is trying to throw off the pitcher and whether or not he wants to steal a base. But, you know, I love this tension. I love people running. It's so exciting. It's one of the most exciting plays. And so to me, I actually think that was like a really underrated. I love watching it. So to see Ronald Acuña, do what he did. I mean, I thought that was extra cool in that sense too.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a lot of fun to watch as a Braves fan, watching him steal base after base, hit bombs.
Yeah.
Play Ronald Acuña Jr. style baseball. it was a lot of fun to watch. And yes, the Braves came up short in October, which I had, as I'd been saying all year, I had, and not to be that guy, but I was correct me if I'm wrong, Willie, but I'm pretty sure I was telling you they were going to get knocked out in the first round. I was pretty sure I was telling you they were going to get knocked out by the Phillies. I was very pessimistic about the Braves, even though they won 104 games.
I was wrong.
You know, so I look, we'll get into this in a little bit, but I think October baseball is such a different beast entirely that you can't really draw conclusions from the regular season other than who's going to be involved. Right. Yeah. So for me, when the Braves won the division, I was like, great, job done. We're on to the playoffs. We're not going anywhere, though, because this team is not built for October. There is no part of the Braves offense to me that screams October baseball. The teams like the Diamondbacks, though, teams like the Marlins, even. I mean, yes, they got swept in the first, in the wild card round, but that to me would have been a better chance than the Braves, because their team is built on pitching and defense.
Mm-hmm.
Well, defense, not so much. Their team is built on pitching. And yes, they lost Sandy Alcantara to Tommy John, but you could tell what they were building. I mean, at their best, they were supposed to have Alcantara, Yuri Perez, Edward Cabrera, Jesus Luzardo. I mean, that's four guys at the top of your rotation with the most unhittable stuff in the game. And to line those four up against any other top four, any other four pitchers is ridiculous.
Can we also mention that the Braves should have been swept because there is no way they should have won game two?
No, game two was, it was a gift.
No way.
And that whole thing, I got my panties in a bunch over that whole thing, I will admit. But really, at the end of the day, the takeaway is not Bryce Harper was extra motivated. The takeaway is Bryce Elder threw the worst pitch you could possibly throw in the world to Bryce Harper in Philadelphia. Like, okay, I'm going to avoid screaming because it's kind of late on a Tuesday night. But Brian Snitker and his staff have a combined 100 plus years in baseball. 100 plus, almost 200.
Not very much.
Like, him and Ron Washington alone is almost 80 years. They have been in the game so long. They have seen it all. Ron Washington, as a manager, was one missed strike call away from the World Series, from winning the World Series with the Rangers. I mean, that was a missed call by the umpire. Neftali Feliz threw a ball basically right down the middle, but the umpire thought it was a little low. And then, obviously, Freeze did what he does and extended the series and yada, yada, yada. So, those two guys in the Braves, right? Washington, Snitker. 80-plus years of Major League experience, okay? 80-plus years. That is wild. Walt Weiss, Rick Kranitz, Kevin Seitzer, Saul Fasano, Eddie Perez. The Braves coaching staff has been around forever, right? On what planet, please tell me, on what planet does nobody in that dugout tell Bryce Elder four pitches in the dirt? Nothing close to the strike zone. Like, nothing. Spike four, please. Because you are making Bryce Harper the guy in Philadelphia, Bryce freaking Harper. You're making him beat you. Of course he's going to beat you. He's Bryce Harper. He's been doing this since he was 16. You cannot pitch to Bryce Harper in that scenario with your back against the wall. Because believe it or not, every game, regardless of what the series says, every game in October is do or die. That has to be your mentality. Now, you can't use every single player as if it's a Game 7 of the World Series, but the mentality has to be you have to fight and claw for every last inch. That is not the approach that the Braves had. You know what Brian Snitker said after the game? He said, yeah, I thought we could get five out of Bryce Elder. I was like, what are you doing trying to get five? What are you doing trying to save your bullpen for? It's the playoffs. Everyone's tired. You had 5 days off. There should be no reason in hell why Bryce Elder was allowed to face Harper, A, or B, why he didn't throw four pitches in the dirt. That was supposed to be a pitch in the dirt. Nowhere near the strike zone. Load the bases. Whatever. Don't let Harper beat you, basically. Like, I'm going to have an aneurysm just like trying to think about the ways that Bryce Harper was put in a position to beat the Braves again and again. He's been doing this since 2012. He's still in the division. He's been in the same division his whole career. He has murdered the Braves his whole career. And still, someone like Brian Snitker, who's been a career Brave, he's been with the Braves his entire career, still cannot grasp the fact that October is do or die, literally. Like, I tried to be optimistic. I tried to have my hopes as high as possible. But, man, when I saw that pitch out of Elder's hand, I was like, that's gone. There's no way in hell that's not gone. So, listen.
So, do you think, let me just ask, what do you think about Orlando Arcia's comments?
It doesn't matter at this point. Like, I'm sure guys like that are trolling other players constantly.
Stories about the great athletes, like the MJs, like they take the slightest bit of motivation.
Willie, that comment does not make Bryce Harper hit an 86 mile an hour hanging slider over the middle of the plate. You know what makes Bryce Harper hit that pitch out? The fact that it was a hanging slider at 86 miles an hour over the middle of the plate.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. As a hitter?
Based on the way he stared at him when he was rounding the bases.
Yeah, okay, whatever. It's Bryce Harper. Like, he's... Like, I'm sorry. Like, I rightfully so... Like, not rightfully so. I way overreacted to the whole thing. I was like, well, the reporter shouldn't have had a credential. I was whining about the whole thing. I admit I was wrong. Okay, he said it. Cool. But the fact of the matter is that you can't throw that pitch to Bryce Harper. You can't. Under any circumstances, throw with anything remotely close to the strike zone. You have to understand that. You I would rather Alec Bohm clear the bases with a three-run double. I would rather have had that happen because, look, a guy who isn't Bryce Harper beat you. Fair enough. You got beat. You can't let someone else beat you. You can't let Bryce Harper beat you like that because he's going to every single time. It's almost like I've seen this movie so many times as a Braves fan. It's like, how can we best shoot ourselves in the foot in October? How can we best do that? Is it by throwing a cookie to Bryce Harper in Philadelphia with a packed Citizens Bank Park? Is it by forgetting how to run the bases in 2020? Is it forgetting that Mike Foltynewicz doesn't know how to pitch? Like, what are we doing? I've seen this movie so many times and I'm trying to be rational about it, but every time I think about that pitch to Bryce Harper, every single time, I just start cackling because it's ridiculous. Ridiculous. That he was allowed to face Harper, number one, and number two, that he didn't spike four sliders in a row.
I think I honestly think it's just bad. And I agree. I think it was just bad managing. And like you said, honestly, just do the, you don't even have to pitch to him. Like, don't even try to pitch around him. Just be like, hey, send him to first.
Well, like, intentionally, unintentionally walk him. The only reason I think you do that is because in that scenario, Willie, if you put Bryce Harper on base in Philadelphia, you're telling 40,000 screaming Philadelphians that you don't want to pitch to Bryce Harper, that you're scared of Bryce Harper. Mm. That is going to do the opposite of what you want to that crowd. That is going to get them even more fired up. And those players, they learn to feed off of it when the Phillies are good. When the Phillies are good, they feed off of that, right?
They are. But man, I trust Bryce Harper way more than anyone still, you know?
I exactly. So in that scenario, there is a world in which you are able to put Bryce Harper on the base paths without actually just pointing and telling him to go to first, right? You throw one pitch that's nowhere necessarily close, another nowhere necessarily close, another, same thing. You do that four times. That's how you put him on base. Because, yay, we got another base runner. Base is loaded. Woo. Okay. But, like, you get filled. Like, I'm sorry. You get Philly riled up. No thanks. No thanks. I mean, the Braves already, they already messed around and found out. So, who cares at this point?
I think, well, to me, here's what I'll say. I think, to me, that totally makes sense what you're saying. Like, you, I mean, regardless, like, you just, you try to do that. Now, maybe that works, maybe not, but there's a chance that that works and you get him to swing at some pitches he shouldn't. But, you know, I will just say that, you know, it's like, it's just so stupid because I know they went down 7-1, so, but I just think in these playoff road games, you got to get a lead. Like, a lead just goes, does wonders. Every so often, you'll see the, you know, blown save or the late rally. That does happen. But, man, if you can quiet the crowd a little bit, it goes a long way. So,
I would have much rather had Alec Bohm hit a grand slam in that scenario.
Same.
I would have much rather had Alec Bohm do that. Because, look, if you let Alec Bohm beat you, fair.
That's okay? The point.
He's the guy who's... You know, he's not the guy who's going to beat you. But if you let Harper do it, like Harper came into the league in 2012. Harper has played for two teams in his career, the Washington Nationals and the Philadelphia Phillies. Both of those teams play in the National League East. Guess who else plays in the National League East? The Atlanta Braves. Bryce Harper is a Braves killer. He demolishes the Braves. Doesn't matter if they're Turner Field or Truist. He annihilates the Braves. And they know this. They should know this at this point. Like, hey, this guy's still really good at baseball. Let's be very, very, very careful. Right? And I understand the fact that, like, you can't play scared at the major league level. You have to go at him with your best stuff and hope it's better. But you have to respect Bryce Harper. If you're Bryce Elder, you have to be like, yeah, I'm confident in my abilities, but, like, dude, this is Bryce Harper. You gotta show some respect. And there's a difference between showing too much respect and showing not enough. And Bryce Elder, Bryce Elder had a great first half. He was somehow an all-star, but his baseball savant page said, this guy's not an all-star. I'm sorry. His baseball savant page says, nah, this is not an all-star. Sorry.
Yeah. And look, it's honestly, like, given how good the Phillies were at home, except for their, somehow they lost 2 to Arizona, but, like, you know, as soon as they went up 4-1, Harper hits that home run, they go up 4-1. You probably think it's over, honestly.
I mean, that's curtains for the series.
Yeah.
For me, I mean, that's curtains for the series.
Yeah. You never know how they're going to do in game 4. It's true. They had a chance. But, you know, I mean, look at San Diego, how they feel about letting pitching the Harper last year, right? So, that's...
Moral of the story also, don't let Yu Darvish pitch to Kyle Schwarber.
What? Too?
Because, I mean... Put those two home runs side by side. The one he hit in Miami off of Darvish in the WBC and the one he hit off Darvish in the NLCS last year. Like, it's almost a carbon copy. Same pitch, same spot, same result. Like, it's wild to me that things like that still happen. I mean, look, I get it. And this is someone who obviously didn't play baseball at a high level at all. Like, I was always bad at baseball, so this is, you know, easier said than done, obviously. And I do want to preface that before any of this, really. Or do want to caveat that, right? This is very important. I understand the concept of, like, having to, you know, play with confidence and, like, go toe-to-toe with your best stuff against their best stuff, and sometimes you just get beat. Well, when their best is a generational talent like Bryce Harper, you have to show him the respect he has so clearly deserved by beating your brains in repeatedly as the Braves. And they just decided not to learn from that, apparently.
It seemed like that in the World Series, too. I mean, guys, they pitched to Garcia or to Seager.
People are still pitching to Yordan Alvarez. I don't understand that.
Oh, Yordan Alvarez, too.
I mean, Yordan Alvarez with a stomach bug. still hit two home runs.
Yeah, unless you rob his home run. You can rob his home run.
Like, what?
Alvarez is probably the most terrifying. I'm still not more terrified than anyone come to the plate than him. He just seems like...
I mean, because he has power in, over the heart of the plate, and away. There's no way to pitch him. Down and away, no. Down and in, maybe, if you execute perfectly. Down the middle, no. Down, up and in, probably not, unless you're throwing like 100. Up middle, you gotta be ready. And then up and away, he still can poke that thing to left field. So, you know, it's just wild to me sometimes that people like Alvarez and Harper will still get pitches to hit. They've done this time and time and time and time and time again, and they still get pitches to hit. Like the home run the Harper hit last year off of Suarez in the NLCS in Philadelphia, like that was not a horrible, horrible, horrible pitch. Like Bryce Harper did what you do with that pitch, and you try to take it the other way. I mean, that was 98 away.
Which is incredible under those circumstances.
Like, in that scenario, right. And that just tells you the kind of player that he is. Like, no moment is bigger than Bryce Harper. So, in that scenario, with two runners on in a tie game at home in a raucous environment where the other team is trying to make fun of you, yada, yada, yada. I've said yada, yada like three times in this podcast, but whatever. You cannot let him beat you. And that's exactly what happened. That is exactly what happened. And it's disgusting to me that I have the utmost respect for what Brian Snitker and his staff did for the Braves in 2021. They brought home a championship. They made the most of a really terrible situation with Acuña's injury. They made the most of it. Anthopoulos got them the team. Team got hot. They won the World Series. And I got to say I watched the Braves win a World Series in my lifetime. That's more than a lot of people can say about their teams, you know? But at the same time, when you have a team this talented, this good, and this young, you expect them to win a lot. And this team felt like they, A, were way better than they were in 21, but also were better than they were last year, too.
Yeah.
And what happened? They did the same thing that they always do every single year. They figured out ways to beat themselves. And that, to me, reminds me a lot of the team of the 90s. Those teams with Maddox, Glavine, and Smoltz, Andrew, and Chipper. 96, 98, 99, 2000, 2001, 2002, 91, 92, I'm pretty sure, 93. Like... You know, like, it just reminded me of the 90s Braves a lot, where they were really, really good in the regular season, but come postseason, they just shoot themselves in the foot. There's just no urgency to me. That was painfully apparent with Brian Snitker, because he's great at managing a team for 162, but it's games 163 and on that really matter. So I really, really wish someone with the courage to make a bold, bold decision and for the right reasons was the manager. But, you know, Snitker is beloved by the players. The players love the coaches, and there's a good vibe in the Braves locker room. I personally don't think this Braves team is built any differently from the teams in the 90s. So... I'm trying to be optimistic. I'm trying to understand that a team that won 104 games disappearing in October is a one-off thing, but I've seen that happen a lot. I've seen it happen time and time and time and time again. So anyways, this was not meant. Sorry. No, go ahead.
I was going to say quickly, like, on the Braves, like, so, I mean, what do you think is the single biggest problem for their playoff failures? Is it the managing? I mean, or is it some structural thing with their team?
I think it's a little bit of everything. I think the offensive approach is a little bit like hit or miss. as in, you know, I mean, Kevin Seitzer's even talked about this, of talked about guys looking for pitches to hit and trying to do damage. That means really big swings, right? That means home run swings on pitches that look like they're hittable, right? It's not, you know, have a really small target and foul off anything that doesn't look close to that, right? That's not the goal of the Braves offense. The goal of the Braves offense is to hit home runs. And they tied the major league record this year. They would have broken it in 2019 if this team was playing in 2019, right? Matt Olson set the franchise record. Great. That's all fantastic, right? But big swings like that don't play in October. Big mm-hmm. swings like that play from really? April through September. But really? In October, your job is not to hit more home runs than the other team. Like, yes, the statistic of like the team that out-homered the other team had a winning percentage.
It's crazy.
Right? That's fine. But at the end of the day, like, that is not going to score you runs in yeah. the same way that manufacturing runs is. And by that, I mean, basically, if you're facing a guy who's coming out of the bullpen throwing 98 to 100, you really can't try to do damage on every single pitch. So you have to pick your spots and try to manufacture runs as best you can. I mean, look, the Braves had the tying run at the plate in, or the, sorry, the go-ahead run at the plate in the ninth inning of game four. And who do they have up in that spot? Vaughn Grissom.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And right. Vaughn hasn't played all year, or he hasn't played a lot this year, but you know that manufacturing a run like that in that scenario is so much harder because everyone else in the lineup is so geared up for try to do damage on pitches that look good to hit. And yes, I'm not a major league hitter. This is all easier said than done. I cannot stress that enough. And for anyone listening to this who thinks I'm just a hack who doesn't know baseball, like, you're probably right. I don't. But from my years of watching baseball, it's a lot more effective. Putting the ball in play is a lot more effective than swinging for the fences every time. And I know that's what the analytics say, that, you know, obviously home runs are good, but
it's so aggravating watching guys. Like, you're so right. Like, the big swings, I completely agree, don't work in October. And you've got to put the ball in play, try to force the defense to make a mistake, move a runner over, you know, hit the ball to the, you know, correct side so they can do it, you know, get a sacrifice fly, you know, just, you have to, you know, like, even, I never thought I'd say this, but even like bunt, like, I'm not huge bunt guy, but like, you know, but just do something. How can you maximize your runners in scoring position? For sure.
Yeah.
But this might be a nice segue, Owen, because I just want to say that, like, to me, look, the Braves got shut out in game one of the DS. Do you think they have the best offense in the MLB?
Statistically, they did, but I honestly don't think that, as far as offenses that play in October, that they did. I don't think they had an offense that plays in October.
Well, see, to me, this might be a nice segue in the sense that, to me, this plays into the problem with the postseason format, which I'll just say, maybe we can do a brief description of, I think there's three changes the MLB should consider to the postseason format. Maybe if you want, I'll list them and then you give me your quick thoughts.
Yeah, no, go for it.
All right. So the first one, which I think there's three things that could realistically happen. They might be a little far-fetched, but three things I'd like to see. Now, what I will just say is that the MLB has this problem where the postseason is so amazing to watch, but the regular season is taking a beating. So the question is, and even with the introduction of the second wild card, that was great. But the question is, how can we keep what makes baseball postseason so great, but also improve the regular season? And, you know, for the record, all five, like we mentioned, all five of the MLB teams with the top record lost. And I think that the Braves of those teams were the only ones to even win a game. And You could say for the fans, that's great. But I do believe that my first solution actually helps. It keeps the playoffs great. Maybe minimizes some of the unfairness and improves the regular season. So to me, you know, the root cause of one of the root causes of the reason why the better MLB teams were losing is the layoff. You know, you go a week without playing baseball. It's for a sport where you play every day. Many players like the Freddie Freemans of the world insist on playing every day. You know, they don't want to have the time off. There's no doubt to me it messes up your rhythm. So to me, one solution, which I think makes the most sense, honestly, is you expand the postseason format to 8 teams in each league. And then, so it does two things. Like, number one, the top 2 teams in each league, preferably you have every round play 5 games, not 3, which would be harder for scheduling purposes. But you expand the format to 8. That way, the top 2 seeds in each league play, don't have a layoff. They go right into it. There's no, whether or not you think the layoff makes a difference, like, they have the same situation as everyone else and no one can complain anymore. And you expand the playoffs, which gives more teams in the MLB regular season a chance, because I think the problem is that there's too much meaningless baseball. And while I love the wild card races, there's, you know, probably a third of the league is playing meaningless baseball by June. And I do think expanding, giving 2 more teams in each league, will significantly increase. That's 2 more playoff teams plus maybe 1 or 2 contending. It's going to give 2/3 of the league a realistic chance of playing meaningful baseball. And so for me, that's the change that I would like to see the most. I don't know. What do you think?
So, okay. Here's my thing with the postseason format. I know this was mentioned on Baseball is Dead. Dallas Braden specifically was talking about this. He said rhythm is such an important factor for all these guys who play 162 games. Everyone talks about the All-Star break being time off. Well, everyone goes to the All-Star break, so why not give everyone the time off? To me, I think the one tricky thing with this format is that we are assigning a direct causation to the bye being bad, right? There's a common denominator with the teams that fail to make it out of the first round after having a bye, right? There are 3 teams that have failed to make it. There have been 5 in the 2 years we've had this format. Only 3 of them have failed to make it out of the first round, okay? 2 of those are the same team. Mm-hmm. Or 2 of those both years. The Dodgers, mm-hmm. the Braves, mm-hmm. and the Orioles. The Orioles this year are the only, I guess, newcomer who didn't make it out. I think I can probably try to explain both of those in a way that doesn't oversimplify it, but I think it gets boiled down to something pretty simple. So with the Orioles, I think that is a case of a team that is so young, they don't know any better.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing. Like, some, you know, they talk about ignorance being bliss and something about youth and whatnot. But I think it's something that you can't really explain to players, even if you've been there before. Like, even if you're a guy like Adam Frazier, for example, right? He was there last year. And you can try to tell the guys what October baseball is like, but until you experience it, I'm sure it's you can't really put it into words. And you can't really communicate that feeling unless you see it. So the Orioles, I think, were just way too young and they got too good too early. I think they had to go through a little bit, you know, some of their like growing pains with this young core, with the Rutschmans and Hendersons and Hayes and Santander and Mountcastle, et cetera, et cetera. I think they had to go through a little bit of go through those rough patches earlier than they did. I think once they started clicking, they didn't face any adversity throughout the rest of the year. Any like true adversity. We're talking like lose possession of the lead. So I think with the Orioles, it's just a question of the team being a little on the young side. With the Braves, I've talked about the Braves already. I won't spend too much more time ranting about them. I will basically just say the Braves are not built to win in October. And I will say the same about the Dodgers. The Dodgers, this season specifically, I think way outperformed their expectations. And I think even by their own admission, they would say they weren't expecting to win 100 games, right? They're in a period of transition. They're trying to get under the luxury tax. They have a bunch of guys on one-year deals like Martinez and Hayward and Peralta, and they had Syndergaard before they traded him. Who am I missing? Miguel Rojas, I think, it was a trade because they lost Lux to injury. They lost Dustin May. They really had to throw bits and pieces together. They called up Bobby Miller way before they were planning on calling him up. The Dodgers had to do a lot this year to make up for what they saw as a less talented roster than they had last year, but they still won 100 games, right? And I think they were bound to regress to the mean eventually, right? With last season's Dodgers, I honestly don't know what happened there. I think it just came down to mismanagement by Dave Roberts with his choices. And I've been pretty vocal about supporting Dave Roberts in his decision making. I know he's a good manager, and if I was a player, I would trust him to make the right decision. But I think sometimes, you know, in October, you run the risk of, you know, damned if you do, damned if you don't. You know, if you make a move and it works out, you look like a genius. And if you make a move and it doesn't work out, you look like an idiot. You know, that's kind of the tightrope that you have to walk. And I think just maybe last year that happened a couple times and you got beat by a team that just got hot at the right time in San Diego. So to me, every one of these moments have been very much explainable. Like, it's not like, oh my God, this team, they had 5 days off and they all of a sudden forgot how to play baseball. Like, no, not quite. Like, there is some element of inexplicable, like Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman going a combined 1-for-21 or whatever it was with one infield hit. Yeah. That's wild to me. Clayton Kershaw just forgetting how to pitch at the highest level and just throwing hanging sliders and hanging curveballs over the middle of the plate. You know, that's not Kershaw. To me, there's just a certain mentality that you have to win in October that doesn't happen if you are the regular season forces that those teams are. I mean, how many teams have the Braves and Dodgers over the last two seasons combined to win both of them? The Braves, let's see, 205 wins over the last two seasons for the Braves. 205.
Yeah.
And the Dodgers have won 211 over the last two seasons. That's a lot of wins. That's a lot of early clinching, right? And my dad had this point where he thinks the earlier you clinch, the worse it is. I wouldn't say that's the case necessarily, but I think it is the case where unless you have the ability to maintain that urgency of like, yeah, we clinched the division, so what? It doesn't matter. We're not done yet.
I love this solution I proposed. Not saying it's the greatest, but part of the reason I love it is because you're getting at the point of it's hard to maintain that competitive edge, that desire, that competitive edge when you've clinched. I agree with you, Dad. When you've clinched early, you know, you lose that competitive edge. Whereas if you're a team trying to play to make in the playoffs, you are playing meaningful baseball. You're completely locked in for a month and you're playing, and that mental edge is going to carry to be their best form. So why not let the top two seeds, I'm not saying it would be great, but knock off a little bit of that rust by playing a first round series. Now, of course, there's the opportunity to lose, but the problem becomes, you know, is it possible that, you know, when you combine a team that's been playing that cutting edge with red hot versus a team that's completely not played for a week? I mean, that's a perfect force. Like, you know what I mean? Like, look at a team like, I would love to see their record, but man, Arizona was good in September. Like, they were really, really good.
Yeah.
You know, that's a perfect situation where, not saying I agree, the Dodgers had, you know, a terrible pitching staff, but hitters went cold. You know, my favorite moment, by the way, the postseason is when Lance Lynn gave up a home run on consecutive pitches, and they reviewed the first home run. And
yeah,
it
was, that was wild.
But it's a perfect buzzsaw, and I just, you could definitely explain them away, and you could also say Milwaukee and Tampa, which were really good too. You know, like ran into Texas and Arizona, so you know, okay, but you know, maybe it's small sample size, but you just never know.
Yeah.
You just never know.
I would say the only reason that I'm hesitant to expand the playoff format, well, I guess one of two reasons that I'm very hesitant to expand or to want to expand the playoff format. Two reasons. A, I don't think there's something about more than half the teams making the postseason that just doesn't sit right with me. And I don't like it about the NBA, and I wouldn't like it about baseball either.
And
because that it just takes so much more away from the regular season, because it's like, well, we don't need to win 100 games to make the postseason. We just need to win 80 and get hot.
The question, though, it definitely devalues the regular season for the top teams, right? But it comes down to a question of what matters more, like a premium on winning the division and a great wild card race, or the additional teams. I would argue it adds. So you could easily argue that proposal devalues the regular season. I would argue the flip side, because my opinion is by adding two more teams, you're taking teams that would play meaningless games in which fans tune out, and you're giving, let's just say, like you're giving 4 to 7, 8 teams even, like a more reason to follow the regular season. And you know, it's like the ratings for some of these teams in smaller markets where the teams aren't good is really bad. And I just think it just gives that segment more of a reason to care.
Yeah.
So it's like you're taking away from the top and adding to the bottom,
which yeah,
is better, I'm not sure, but I just think there's just too many teams that it's like, if I'm a fan of, you know, like Detroit, you know, not to single them out, or you know, like one of these really bad, you know, teams, like why am I gonna you know, Kansas City, like why am I gonna
you're right. I just have a hard time wrapping my head around the fact that a team with a losing record has a chance to make the postseason. And that's effectively what adding two more teams does. It gives more teams a chance to make the postseason with a losing record. And to me, that's what 162 games tries to prevent. And even so, like, say, for example, a team that wins 79 games, right, makes it to the World Series. That'd be wild. Makes it to the postseason, right? Guess who they get to play in the first round? A team like the Braves or the Dodgers, who won like 111 games last year and 100 this year with like a less than great roster compared to last year. Or the Braves, who won 104 this year with the presumptive NL MVP on the roster and the guy who set the franchise record for home runs. You have to play that after a slog just to make it to the postseason. Like it doesn't do what I think we're hoping it's going to do. I think it does the opposite. Like, I don't know. You could make the argument either way. I think both of us have decent cases for why it should be the way it is. I do think we need more evidence, though, to definitively say that it's bad. I think it's good because you have a team like Arizona, who a lot of people, at least in the mainstream, didn't really circle this year as a team to watch. But I remember watching them in March, and I was like, oh God, this team is going to be annoying. This team is going to, they're going to pop up at some point. And to see an 84 win team with the budget they've had, the journey they went on to go to the World Series this year, I mean, it was good for baseball because you had two teams that built their squads in very different ways. You have the D-backs, who are very much this analytic heavy, Mike Hazen, formerly of the Red Sox. They put it together in a way that's very Moneyball-esque, very live at the edges, live at the margins. How do we extract the most value out of what we have? And what we have is a big stadium. What plays in a big stadium? Guys who are really fast. And yeah. So they built our team off of that. The Rangers built their team off of, do we have the money to go out and get the premier players at every position? Semien, Seager, Jacob DeGrom, Evaldi, sure. Et cetera, et cetera. And then also internally, guys like guys on smaller, more under the radar, like Lowe, Garcia, mm-hmm. Tavares, rookies like Young. I mean, I think the Rangers get all the headlines for like buying a World Series for, I think, for the wrong reasons. They get in the headlines because of that, but they don't get praised for spending on the right kind of people. Marcus Semien set the major league record for most plate appearances in a season this year. Yeah. Corey Seager, back-to-back or a two-time World Series MVP, not back-to-back, two-time World Series MVP. Jacob DeGrom, best pitcher on the planet when he's healthy. Of course, he basically was a non-factor this year. So I don't know. I really love the matchup this year in the World Series, mostly just because the Phillies got knocked out, and I was salty about the Braves losing to the Phillies again, even though the Phillies are just, they're just good. The Phillies also, I want to make this point. The Phillies should have been much better than they were this season. I'm sorry. They way underperformed their expectations. They signed Trey Turner off of a all-time heater in the World Baseball Classic, and the dude disappeared until like August.
Yeah. There's like, that story. Remember they gave him an ovation?
Yeah, and then he turned into like prime Barry Bonds. It was crazy. But no, the point I'm making though is that the format gives teams, it gave more teams an opportunity to make the postseason and try to make a run like the D-backs made. Like the Marlins had that opportunity too, although granted is they were kind of running out of gas as they got to the postseason. I don't know. I think there's, and the other thing that prevents me from really saying the format is bad is because there's two teams that haven't had an issue with the bye whatsoever. One happened to be the team that won it all last year and went to the ALCS for the seventh consecutive year this year in the Astros. And the other team is the Yankees. So why do they not have issues with the bye? The Astros specifically, why do they not have issues with the bye, but everyone else does?
I think that would be easy to explain away and just say the Astros are this dominant team.
No, but like they've won the World Series. They have guys who have been there and done that before. Like it's if you're saying like, oh, where's the hunger and the desire? They made it out of the first round. They got pushed to game seven.
Let me ask you a question, right? So the top five teams didn't make it, and I think the Astros would be sixth. It's the sixth best record, I think.
Let's see. Braves, Dodgers, Orioles.
So the Braves, Dodgers, Orioles, Tampa, and Milwaukee.
Tampa, Milwaukee.
And I think Astros would be sixth.
Yeah, Astros and Phillies had the same record, so they'd be sixth.
Yeah. So then, and...
And the Rangers.
Yeah. So I think, you know... What would be interesting is like if, like, you're right, like the Astros had a bye. So let's just say that's like five out of the six best teams, right? Like, didn't make. So, like, what I think would be interesting is what happens if something similar happens the next couple of years? Like, at what point do we get a big enough sample where it's like, well, maybe it's just coincidence or maybe we have a problem? Like, what would it take you to be convinced that the format is a problem?
I mean, it would take, I don't know, man. It would take a lot to convince me that the format is the problem. Like, because imagine if the proposal that you're saying, where mm-hmm. there's two more teams in each league, and this is one that my girlfriend, that she suggested as well. She's kind of on the same, in the same boat as you. So you suggest just adding more teams to it because then you don't have anyone that has time off. But then if a team wins 104 games, shouldn't they be rewarded with something other than just, hey, you won the most games in the regular season, here's the one seed? Like, teams in the NFL get a bye, so why don't teams in baseball get a bye?
That's a great – and I think football, you know, just that question, you're right, teams typically do well. Yeah. I think – I would argue that football, it's more necessary because of the injury component. So, like, you really – like, having guys healed up is great. But one thing I will say, which I think is interesting, is, like, you say they should be rewarded with something. Actually, let me just say my second which point about the format, because I actually think this lends itself to. So here, one of the big problems I have with the format, and I don't know, people are, I would love to compare this, but people are going to say this is not that big a deal, and maybe it's not. But to me, in my opinion, right, like, you know, you have this layoff and you have the short series, and the first couple games are tough, you know, like they're like you'd expect over the course, right, like of the series, the team that's rusty to get better, right? So to me, the other change, I mean, there's a few, but I'll just say this one, like the other thing that I'd really like to see changed, and I'm not sure it would ever happen, and I also don't know if you could give the choice. You can probably know where I'm going here, but I would really like to see the 2-3 format in the DS, ALDS and NLDS come back, because to me, like, it's just a perfect formula where you have a, you know, you take what happened to the Dodgers with Clayton Kershaw, can't even get out of the inning. You take the Phillies coming in there, winning game one. You know, to me, even, I mean, I don't know, it's weird to say because the Astros were so bad at home, but, you know, they lost to Minnesota in the second game. So to me, I just think, you know, you're Atlanta, you're like, we got to win our home games because we're going to go back to Philly and they have a crazy home field advantage. And, you know, the Dodgers, are, maybe Arizona not as much, but the Dodgers still have, are much better at home. To me, I think they should have the option of doing the 2-3 because no matter what happens, if you're like a little rusty, you have three in a row at home to close out, and they're going to have to close it out in your home field. And you could say, well, that's dumb because you're actually giving the road team an advantage to start the series well. But to me, like, sometimes I watch these series, these division series, and I'm just like, man, if the favorite loses one of those first two games, they're in trouble. I felt the same thing watching the Dodgers San Diego last year. I was like, the Dodgers lost game two. San Diego's going to be rocking game three and four. Like, they are in trouble. So I would actually rather have to go back to the 2-3 format like it used to be in the MLB and give the – I mean, I'm not saying they'd ever give the teams the option, but, like, I would love to see them have that ability to finish the series well. That's just my opinion.
Yeah. No, that's I like that point. I think there's a bit of nuance in there that kind of gets lost in – this, like, what is a first round bye really do? Like, what does a layoff do? What does rust do? And I don't know. I think there's so much debate about the format itself, but I think the one thing that we kind of are getting away from is the reason the league put this in place in the first place. Besides to bring owners more money, is to incentivize owners to actually care about whether or not their teams win or lose from April through September, right? Is to prevent teams like the A's and the Royals, who didn't try to be this aggressively bad, but were just this bad anyway. John Fisher does not care about the A's, right? He should be an outlier, and he is. But every other team has an owner who, it, you would assume, in some way cares about the team. And with this format, it incentivizes more and more owners to care about their team. To me, it's a positive thing when you have a format that incentivizes teams going for it, and not just, we don't think we're going to be able to win more than 84 games this year, so we're just going to, you know, put it in neutral and just coast through the rest of the season and not really care about how we end up in September and October and just try again in, you know, next April. To me, that it incentivizes teams actually caring and, like, going for it. Like, teams like the Diamondbacks last year teams like the Diamondbacks a couple years ago, they would not have traded for Paul Sewald at the deadline. Teams like the Diamondbacks a couple years ago at the deadline would have probably sold. They probably would have traded, like, I wouldn't say to Ketel Marte, but they wouldn't have got Tommy Pham. They wouldn't have got Paul Sewald. You know, it incentivizes teams actually being aggressive and open-minded. It prevents it's kind of the anti-tank thing. It's like, hey, you have this opportunity to make the postseason. And yes, I get the other thing where it's like, oh, it's really just a cash grab because the owners have to pay players more because the luxury tax threshold is higher. But at the end of the day, I think it just comes down to really you got to build your team to win in October as well. You can't just like it's a funny thing. Like, baseball will never be predictable. It's just so hard to make sense of it. Like, we talk about it all season long, and I know you and I missed the regular season this season. We couldn't record any of the podcasts because, you know, life just gets in the way sometimes. But the whole idea of, hey, that's baseball, isn't it? It pops up so many times throughout the year. And
yeah,
it's even more the case in October. Like, in October, a base runner is a rally. From April through September, it's just a base runner, you know? So I think there's, you know, we need more information, but I think it's really, really irresponsible to just say like, oh, it's the format. That's why we're, you know, that's why we're in this scenario.
Well, I will just say, to close the point out, like, I will just say that to what you're saying, you know, it is baseball, and that's what makes it beauty. And I don't know, like, to me, what you were saying kind of lends more credence to the anti-taking point, lends more credence to more teams, right? Because to me, in my opinion, that is the single biggest problem with baseball. I mean, there is so much tanking or just bad teams. And if you're not going to shorten the regular season, then you've got to make more teams care about it. You know, and to me, maybe even a bigger problem, honestly, part of the reason I'm for, like, maybe we can agree, like, maybe the beauty of, you've got to build your teams to build October. So what I'll say is, like, maybe I care more, less about the good teams losing and just more about, I want more teams to try.
Yeah.
Or like more teams to really have a go for it. Not, don't manipulate your service time. Like, have a sense of, don't sell people at the
line. No, that for sure. Yeah, that I think needs to be the big takeaway. I think my issue is just a lot of people had the takeaway of like, oh, the Braves and Phillies and Astros, et cetera, didn't play in the World Series. Like, the format is the problem. I was like, no, that's not the takeaway. The takeaway should be that any team can make it regardless of how many games they win in the regular season, is as long as they can get to the postseason. If you can get to the postseason, you can make it to the World Series.
I'll tell you what. One of the arguments people would say about expanding the postseason is maybe that, which might be true, like, maybe there's just not enough good teams that could really do it. Like, maybe if you added a couple teams, like, they couldn't be in Arizona. But I will say, man, I would have loved to see Cincinnati in the postseason. I'll tell you that.
That would have been fun. I
love watching that team. They were so fun to watch.
Yeah.
I would like seeing Chicago. You know, they're interesting. You know, I personally would have loved to see Seattle.
You know?
Like, Cleveland. I mean, Cleveland was a little out of it this year, but you never know. I mean, they made some moves to, you know, not be well. I mean, I think everyone would have liked seeing the Yankees or the Mets. I mean, if they could have.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll tell you what. If the Mets, if they can make the playoffs, you think the Mets are trading Verlander and Scherzer? I mean, I don't know. I mean, so. Anyways, this sport, man, like, it's such a great sport, and I want every team to have a chance, man. I I don't want teams to just be bad year after year, you know? Yeah.
No, I hear you, man. I hear you. We have been going on and on about baseball for a while, though, so I think we need to just kind of circle it back and round it up and just kind of say that I think the sport is in a really good place. I think we do need more information on how the layoff really affects these teams. And, you know, personally, I think it's just down to, in this specific instance, it's because it is who it is. It's less so the layoff causes them to be bad. I think it's more so just the combination of yes, the layoff plays, it plays a part in it, but I don't think it's the reason. I think it's a contributing factor, but it's not the reason. The reason is just the team is not built to win in October. The team is built to scrape by during the regular season where each individual game doesn't mean as much. So, you know, if you get boat raced in the first inning of a game in July, you know, it's fine. You can just let your starter wear it, you know. But if you let that happen in October and you let your starter wear it, then you're going home early.
That's absolutely right. And that's a whole discussion itself we could have about how do you build a team for the playoffs. Like that's
yeah. Basically, you just need Will Smith. That's such a funny stat. First guy in history to win a championship 3 years in a row with three different teams. That's really funny.
Crazy.
Started with the Braves, though. So,
yep.
Yeah. And that's another thing, too. Like, 2019.
You know, the Dodgers win, too.
True. Yeah, I guess. Different Will Smith, but yeah. I guess he gave up that home run to Will Smith.
That's
so.
What I'm saying.
Yeah. I see what you did there. What I was going to say was, that's the other thing about October, to put a fine point on it, and that baseball is baseball. Like, 2019, Nats had the worst bullpen statistically in baseball, won the World Series. 2021, Braves lost the best player on their team, won the World Series. 2023,
mm-hmm.
Diamondbacks made the World Series. It was like
I think bullpens are so important. It's just the regular season bullpen doesn't matter. It's like you got to get a couple hot pitchers. Like all these teams,
Arizona, Will Smith
and Washington, like just ride their hot guys in the bullpen. You know?
Tyler Matzek being from another planet last 2021, last time the Braves won the World Series. 2021.
Tyler Matzek, exactly. In Texas.
Tyler Matzek. And then Will Smith that year. Will Smith, who was horrendous as a closer. He had like six blown saves and like a 3.5 ERA, which is not awful. Like, it's good, but it's not that good. He had an ERA, Willie, between 0 and -1. And you can't have a negative ERA. So his ERA was 0.
That's nuts.
And he, like, it's wild to me that kind of stuff can happen in October. But it did. And sometimes you just can't really explain things like the Mookie Betts, Freddie Freeman drought, or the Braves just disappearing, or attaboy Harper. And hey, maybe next time don't throw 86 right down the middle to Bryce Harper. That's probably a good idea. Don't do that again.
For sure. No, yeah.
I need to enjoy a few months of not having the Braves disappoint me again.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I was right. I was telling people were telling me, like, dude, just enjoy it. And I was like, oh, dude, we're not going to win in October. I'm telling you. As soon as Charlie Morton went down for the NLDS, I was like, yeah, we're done. That means Bryce Elder's getting the ball. And Bryce Elder should not be getting the ball.
Strider was pretty good, though, for the most part.
Strider did his job. Strider did what he was supposed to do. He kept the team in the game as long as he could. But ultimately, the Braves they Braves'd it, you know?
Yeah.
They went full Atlanta.
100%. 100%.
That's all I got anyway, so.
Yep.
I think we've put a fine point on this. I think we'll skip our hot take segment this time just because we've had so much content to get through. But next week, folks, we'll be back with our hot takes segment. The reason we call this show Hot Takes Only is at the end of every show, we just line up our hottest takes from the sporting world and just throw them at you. But do appreciate you listening to this episode of Hot Takes Only. This is our, I don't know, third, fourth, fifth reboot of this show. We've tried to be more consistent about it, but I'm going to be honest. Life gets in the way, man. I wish I could do this full time, but maybe one day. But Willie, any final parting thoughts for our folks before we get out of here?
No, I have a good hot take for next week. I'll save it.
All right. Keep it in the chamber, my man. All right, folks. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching whatever clips we decide to put on social media. This has been episode 53 of Hot Takes Only, parts 1, 2, and 3. Look out for the other two parts. If you haven't listened to them already, wherever you get your podcast, wherever you're listening to this, we'll see you folks next time. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.